Hey, it's Mark Farrell on PRN.FM, Progressive Radio Network, coming to you live from New York City on the Upper West Side. Beautiful day in New York City, and hopefully where you are too. Maybe if you're in Germany, you're with Rihanna, who's still partying with the Germans after they won. How cool is that? If you don't like Rihanna's music, you gotta love her spirit and her ability just to hang and be, well, somewhat normal when you're a multi-millionaire. She's hanging out with the German soccer players, the team, after their win. And I'm sure she parted ways by now, but in my mind, she's still partying with them. Very, very cool. We've got a great show ahead. We're going to be talking about how much screen time is the right amount of screen time for your kid, whether it's an iPhone, any part of social media, computer, whatever the device may be. We'll also be talking about entitlement. Entitlement for teens, kids, and some adults. It is something that's taken the country and parts of the world by firestorm, because kids just feel like they should have everything and anything. Do you feel that way? We'll be taking your calls as well at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. On the way in this morning, I saw a great band jamming in Times Square, and it made me think about something I read the other day. And this is really cool. This is like such a New York story, that a bunch of eighth graders who have been gigging in the streets for years, who call themselves, what's the name of the band? I forget the name of the band. But they got signed by Sony. I kid you not. For guess how much? $2 million. These kids are going to be in eighth grade this September. They've been gigging in Times Square for years. So that's one of the first questions that popped into my mind. Like, well, how could these kids have been gigging in New York City for years? Where are their parents? Hopefully they were standing nearby. But apparently they were shot. No. Don't read into this. They weren't shot. I mean, yeah, when you say New York City and shot, they were captured on video, uploaded to YouTube, and of course, you know, the rest is all history because it circulated and got, you know, record amount of views, et cetera, et cetera. Sony was captured or enamored by them, and the kids really rock out. It's mostly rock music. And these kids bop back and forth with their guitars slung over their shoulders, and it's a really kind of impressive sight. Now, the band I saw this morning, I don't think is going to be having her doors knocked down by Sony. But hey, maybe those kids, started in the same place where you got to get your chops. And there's nothing like getting some grime and some good experience in the Big Apple here. So when you go to the beach or outdoors, nearby park, rooftop, pool, what do you use as a barometer to know that you're getting too much sun? When to turn over? I mean, when I was young, I used to go outside for hours, man, hours, and get so burnt. I used to have sun blisters. It was gross. It was bad. I cannot believe my skin is as healthy as it is right now. Really fortunate. But this caught my eye the other day. There is a tanning app. I kid you not. There's got to be an app for life in general, but this is a tanning app. It's called iTanSmart. Now, based on your skin type, which you had to discover, like type 2, I think, is fair. Tells you when to reapply lotion, when to turn over, and Mark Farrell's version of this iTanSmart should be when to hit on the person next to you. Because, I mean, if you're on the beach or at a pool, come on, admit it. In your mind, even if you're with somebody else, you're thinking about how hot somebody is around the pool. Like, wow, man, that person, male or female, has got a banging body. Banging. So maybe you can go up to them and say, hey, my iTanSmart app isn't working. Is yours? But the funny thing is actually that iPhones and other smartphones don't operate well in the heat, because obviously it's a piece of technology. It's a computer. Would you bring out your Mac and put it on a table without an umbrella? It would bake. As a matter of fact, most smartphones, I believe, will display a message when it starts to overheat. It says, get me out of the sun or turn on iTanSmart. So your dumbass can realize I shouldn't be in the sun. And it has to cool down for a few minutes before it can reactivate it. I've never been a huge fan of Oprah shows, not because I dislike them, just because I really never watched them because of the time period that they're on. I respect her, certainly, as a talk show host, as a person, a do-gooder. She is philanthropic beyond philanthropics, and I'm very impressed by that. And her show that I do catch, though, I think it's called the Master Series or something of that name or caliber. And it's on later at night, so that's how I'm fortunate enough to catch him. So the other night I caught a portion of the Vanessa Williams interview. And Vanessa Williams, I'm a major fan of because at a former life, I used to work at a radio station in New York City called CD101.9. It was a smooth jazz station. And that started in 1989. It was the first smooth jazz station in the nation. And believe it or not, Vanessa Williams was played a lot. I know you say jazz, but you put the words together, smooth jazz, you can get away with a lot more crap. Anyway, so she came up lots of times. As beautiful as she was, her personality far trumped her looks because she was just very, very pretty. Really enjoyed speaking with her. Very, very simple and down-to-earth person. And she was a great singer. She really was. So she wrote a book about, a memoir about a year or two ago. And I think she recanted this statement since then. But she talks about it during the Oprah interview, that when she was 10 years old, she went with her family's friends to a destination, I think, across the country, because I think she is from Westchester originally. So Vanessa Williams, alone, without her parents, goes with her friend's family and stays at their friend's family's house. Confusing, right? Anyway, that's not that important. The important fact is that she's 10 years old at the time, and she's sleeping in a room with another girl. I guess her friend or friend's friend of the family's. Who knows? It's confusing. And then what happened was one night, one of the girls who lives there, who was 18 years old at the time, Vanessa Williams, 10, this girl is 18 years old, sneaks into the bedroom and says to Vanessa, get on the floor. And she proceeds to, because a 10-year-old is going to be obviously scared and or, you know, following the orders of somebody who she thought was very cool. Vanessa said she thought this woman was very cool because she was very decisive. She smoked cigarettes and she just had that, cool vibe. So she proceeded to get on the floor, and the woman took off her undergarments and proceeded to perform oral sex on Vanessa. So here she is, some 10-year-old, you know, experiencing this, and she said she felt that it was wrong, but she also said it felt really good. So that was the one and only time during this interview that she said it happened. Did it continue after that? Probably not, because it was a one-time deal where she traveled with this family's family and stayed with this other family's friends. She was prepared to tell her parents when she got off the plane returning back home, but she could tell that by her father's face that something was really wrong. His brother, her uncle, had just died, so she felt horrible to unleash this news, put this huge burden on her parents about this sexual abuse from a family friend. So she never spoke of it. But the thing I hope that doesn't get really, you know, misrepresented is that the portion where Vanessa Williams said it felt good. I'm sure it did because, you know, there's lots of studies on this, Masters and Johnson, a lot of biologists and scientists, and, you know, we all grew up reading this in school, that there are certain, obviously, it's an erogenous zone, and whether it's whatever the case may be, something of that caliber is going to feel good. So, but I hope she doesn't get, you know, really mocked because of that, because, you know, she was 10 years old. What was she supposed to do? And if it did feel good, you know, she's telling the truth. It did feel good. So it got me thinking about, okay, I have a 5-year-old son and soon to be a 2-year-old daughter. You know, what do you say to your kids? I mean, we always tell our children there are no such thing as secrets. Just surprises, things of that nature, because, you know, if someone's going to do something secretive, that usually means you don't tell your parents. So God forbid this happens to anybody listening, your children, nephews, etc., friends, kids. It would be a tragic thing, and we hear about this all the time. But, you know, how much can you tell your child in preparation? Yes, we tell our kids that, you know, this is your private area. No one should touch this. Only the doctor. And the doctor has to be with me, meaning your dad and mom. And you always tell this to your kids about other people as well, friends or other adults. But it is a scary thing. She was 10 years old, so obviously she had the gift of speech. I'm sure she was very bright back then because she's a bright person now. But it's kind of scary to think about that. But I hope she feels a little bit freed. And maybe the person who committed this sexual act would feel terrible. Yes, Casey Kasem is no longer broadcasting. And yes, he's still above ground. If you're counting, it's over 4 weeks. Yeah, he did die 4 weeks ago. Poor guy. You know, he was corny, but he was a success. He really paved a radio format for many people to come, whether you like it or not, the countdowns and the letters. This letter goes out to Jason Tobinfield from Westfield, Alabama. Dear Casey, I would like to request one of those things. Anyway, the reason why he hasn't been buried yet, because his wife, Casey's wife, wants a private autopsy performed because of the Casey's oldest daughter, who is absolutely gorgeous. I'm sorry to bring in looks at this point, but she is absolutely gorgeous. His son's good looking as well. His oldest daughter feels that her estranged stepmom took Casey out of the home where he was. It was a full care facility, I believe, prematurely, and that's why he died. So there's lots of drama there, litigation going on. She signed a complaint against the stepmother, etc. So poor Casey Kasem no longer has a mic in his hand, but is still 6 feet above the ground. Maybe we should put a mic in front of his hand. Maybe he can clear this up once and for all for everybody and say, hey, my wife did take me out of this facility, institution, prematurely, and that's why I kicked the bucket. So please put me 6 feet under. $47 million Giselle earned last year. $47 million. Can you believe that? Unfathomable. I wonder what that breaks down like per smile or per sexy pose. Tom Brady must be like, oh, man, holy shit. She's making as much money as I am, or more. She's got to be making more than Tom Brady. In a year, Tom's not making in $47 million. Wow, that's pretty impressive. Kim Kardashian, since we're on the topic of money and women, I think we're actually going downhill a little bit from Giselle to Kim Kardashian. But anyway, whatever you think of her, she has a new, yes, I repeat this, Kim Kardashian has a new iPhone app. Can you believe that? Yeah, I'm sure she probably has about 10 iPhones with different colors and scents and sizes and do all kinds of crazy things. But apparently, sure, she hasn't created this app, but it's expected to make 200 million. So Giselle, you look like a poor, poverty-stricken supermodel who needs a good meal with your 47 million compared to Kim Kardashian's 200 million for an iPhone app. Holy Jesus, I cannot believe this. What are we doing wrong? Why are we in broadcasting? Tell me, somebody, why? Well, you know, good for her, man. She can do it. But apparently the product is supposed to make 200 million. She's only going to make X percentage of that, which they are estimating to be about 45 million. 2 million less than Giselle. Still, that's a lot of dinero. And it's just hard to fathom. I can't call them America's first family by all means, but you feel like they are because they're always in the news. But to come up with a app is kind of brilliant because, you know, she is ubiquitous. I can't say everyone, but so many people watch her. I wonder what the median demographic and age and gender is that is awestruck by the Kardashians. From what I read, and it's not much, it's more about what I hear because I'm somewhere and I can't turn off the TV or a radio, that, you know, it's just all deplorable crap. It's all crap. But hey, it's America, man. Land of the free. If you can do it, you can do it. So what's in front of you right now? Obviously, you're listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. So you're either listening via your smartphone, your computer. And what country are you in? Let me know. Go on our website, or you can give us a call, 888-874-4888. And the reason why I want to know is because I want to talk about screen time. Because I'm sure no matter where you live, I'm sure there are areas that are more dense than others. So you may be experiencing this more frequently or less frequently, depending on the size of the city where you live. But I call, like, the new generation the bent neckers, whatever that age group would be, because obviously it spans. Because everyone walks around city streets of New York, Florida, Georgia, wherever you want to go, Ukraine. Everyone has their neck bent over with their smartphone. And I cannot believe, actually, I should probably speak to some emergency room doctors and find out how many people come in and receive injuries because they were looking down their iPhone and didn't see a pothole, didn't see a brick wall they walked into or a glass plate glass window. I'm sure this happens all the time. But the thing is, it just really has, I think it is doing a lot of damage to our society. And this is nothing new. I mean, this has been talked about, speculated about. I was in a bar last Saturday night for my wife's birthday, actually last Friday night. And yeah, we're actually at a bar past midnight. Having two kids, that is worth writing a book alone in itself because it's an anomaly, an aberration. It was a great time. Anyway, so my wife points to me and she goes, look over there. I'm like, where? She goes, the people behind you. I said, I can't because they're right behind me. They're going to see me. She goes, they will never, ever see you. Trust me. I turn around. It's a young, good-looking couple, probably in their mid to late 20s. And for about 2 or 3 minutes, when I kept checking back, neither one of them ever looked up because they both had their smartphones out and were glued to whatever. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they were sexting each other. Maybe that's a good way to think of it. Okay, well, they're not going to look at each other when they're 1 foot away from each other, but maybe they can communicate via text. But it made me think about, again, because this always bothers me when you're standing in line, when people are either searching, and I understand there's certain times that are perfect, ideal to use your smartphone, like you're waiting in line. But when it's your turn, don't like be delayed because you're, you know, trying to get to another page or another site or upload something to Facebook or Instagram. You know, give us a break. Give the world a break, man. Put it down. It's really annoying. So I started thinking about that, and I'm pretty good about it. I don't have I certainly don't have a bent neck, like the new generation that I'm referring to, the bent neck generation. But, one of the things is because I have really bad eyes, being visually impaired. Having a smartphone is very, very helpful, but also sometimes I need double magnification. Like I'm wearing these cheap-ass Duane Reade, which is a drugstore, magnification glasses, like $10 glasses. And then I have a pocket magnifier. So it's kind of difficult for me to have a lot of screen time, especially in general public, because it has to be kind of the right lighting. But this will be my last iPhone because, you know, all the other Samsung, all the other manufacturers have caught up and surpassed Apple, I believe. And I'm really tired of Apple having to be like the monopoly on smartphones. Oh, you get a new phone. Oh, you need a new charger and a cigarette charger. Oh, yes, nothing is transferable or adaptable to your previous version of an iPhone. So when I think about screen time, I think about, all right, all the people I know in my life and a few family members. This is where it gets on my nerve. When I have family over, which I'd like to have more often, them come over, but a lot of them are not located that close, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours away. But when they do come over, you know, there's a lot of personal usage of their smartphone. And then I find out later that they're uploading pictures to Facebook. I'm like, really? We never see each other, and this is what you have to do. It's more important to tell people where you are and what you're doing than to bask in the moment of being with family. Hey, I'm all about having a good time. It's not all about family. I love family and friends, and family drives me nuts just like every other, you know, person in this world, but I love them to death. But I want you there when you're there. Don't you want the person you're speaking to be present in the now? 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. This is PRN.FM. We're talking about screen time, and we're going to be talking about entitlement in the second half of the program. I'm really happy to bring someone on who is a parenting coach, renowned in the field, and a real hell of a nice person. Her name is Joan Keefe. Hey, Joan, how are you?
Hey, doing well, Mark. How you doing?
What's in front of you right now? Smartphone?
You got it. I'm talking on one, and I've got a computer to my left.
Ah, and what's your screen on? Keep it clean now.
Keep it clean. She knows. I'm on actually something that I got off Huffington Post.
All right, all right. So, you know, you and I spoke about this very quickly that I probably should say the world's obsession with what's in their hand.
Exactly.
Have we surpassed the enough is enough phase?
I don't know. I mean, I think you have to understand, and I think you just were talking about it really clearly, that we're bringing up a generation where this is normal. And it isn't so much about reversing it back to a time where they get it, that there's a better balance between face-to-face and technology. It's really about parents and people who have some authority over the younger generation setting really clear limits about the amount of screen time and then being really consistent with that.
What do you think it says about, again, we're going to have to probably take this with a grain of salt because the generation that we are talking about, we'll talk about the, I guess, the millennials, the younger millennials.
Right.
That
exactly.
That this is the norm for them, but but when will they actually get it that certain circumstances aren't appropriate?
Yeah, I think if a child is under the age of 18 or right around there and living at home, you know, it's really up to parents to make a plan on how to respond to technology, be proactive, sit down, have a problem-solving conversation, and let them know that it's not okay for them to be on 24/7. One of the things we recommend on the support line is parents setting a restriction that there's no internet access overnight so that everybody has the right and the need to sleep. So that's a place to begin. And then that any kind of internet access is something that's earned. After chores and after dinner and after family time, that's when it happens, and it's happening just for a limited time. And that teaches kids balance automatically. And then they can bring that forward. There are 20-somethings right now who are learning it in the workplace. You know, I had an instance with a coworker friend of mine who had asked a younger generation person to talk to some staff members about some issues. And when she got the communication to do that, she emailed them instead of speaking to them. And
really?
So that's a really clear example of that's just where they're coming from, not right or wrong. It's just about continuing to communicate.
That's how they interpreted it.
There's a balance. You got it. There's a balance between face-to-face and technology.
I just had an epiphany. I'm going to share it with you right now, but you have to promise me you're not going to, you know, trademark this or copyright it or develop this app before me. Maybe one exists already, but check this out, Joan Keefe. If there was an app that you could set as an adult or a teen, maybe as a parent, you can set it for your teen, that come like certain hours within a day, preferably night, like between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m., you can lock your phone where you can't surf the web.
Interesting.
How cool would that be? So you can make calls, emergency calls, you could text, or maybe even it could be an option not to text, but obviously you can make calls. How cool would that be?
That would be really effective. And in fact, we have parents work with us all the time when kids are earning the privilege of a smartphone. Sometimes parents will leave off and not pay for texting so that the child only has certain access. It's really important to not give the message that you have to restrict technology altogether. It's really about teaching and coaching kids to use it responsibly. And what you're talking about balances this thing. Yeah.
We've all been in restaurants before and we've seen, I'd say in the past, historically, older couples who seem like they've been married for, you know, maybe 15, 20, 25 years. Obviously, the kids are gone, empty nest syndrome, and they're out at dinner and they're not talking. Or they're both reading newspapers. And that's something I would see certainly pretty common, like, not common, but not uncommon 7 to 10 years ago. But now you see younger couples doing the same thing, but with technology. And I think it's just a sad reflection. I don't know if you were on the phone on hold when you heard me talking about possibly this couple that was behind me the other night. But, I mean, this is pretty commonplace where, you know, but why be out? I mean, maybe again, it could have been where, you know, they say, hey, listen, we both let's agree to 5 minutes. Let's just check our emails to handle some work issues and we'll both put them down. Who knows? Maybe we caught them in that phase. But the thing that kind of bothers me is, like, you know, when do we forfeit, you know, a person's company, the enjoyment of, you know, conversation?
Exactly. Exactly. There are very important skills that come from learning and practicing to communicate with people directly. And it's usually very uncomfortable to learn those, right? That's why it's uncomfortable in your teens. That's why it's uncomfortable when you have conflict in relationships with your family and others, because you have to hang in there and work it out and find common ground and make it better. And it's much easier to text or to call or, you know, the email than it is to do the hard work of the face-to-face communication.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, we talk about natural consequences on the line all the time. And, you know, the folks who are struggling with technology, and there are people who who are not millennials, who are older than that, that are struggling with too much technology, and they're getting natural consequences for focusing too much on it at work and at home. And that's the kind of thing that will really encourage people to start to make some changes when their relationships or their job isn't working.
And as a parent expert, Joan Keefe, I'm sure you'll concur that it starts by leading by example. If parents are attached to their iPad as soon as they get home or their smartphones, you know, a lot of people are. If they maybe can't, if they're driving on the way home, and hopefully they're not texting or checking their email, that they may have to check in with work for whatever reason, because obviously there's no such thing as a 9-to-5 job anymore. It's 24/7, 365. But that example that you're setting for your kids, you can't say, hey, put down your smartphone or your Leap Pad, but I can still use mine.
Exactly right. Role modeling is one of the most powerful things you can do. I think one of the hardest things for parents to understand is role modeling oftentimes doesn't feel like you're doing anything out of the ordinary and that your kids aren't getting it, but kids watch us for a living. That's what James Lehman says, who's the creator of Total Transformation. They watch us for a living, and they notice a lot more than we think they do, and you're absolutely right. If you have settling in time, which is one-on-one, face-to-face connecting time, when you're home, if it happens at dinner and technology doesn't happen after that, you're letting them know what a priority is, and that's communicating and connecting. It's really about building better relationships, and it's about making the effort to do it face-to-face first and then let technology be part of your life, but manage it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it does sound very possible, and otherwise, if you don't, I just feel like the whole the fluidity, the whole nuclear family model will change.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think, you know, there's a lot that's different now. We can't parent from where we were raised. You know, technology moves too fast, and it's made everything so comfortable that folks are expecting comfort and rewards without effort. So it's really just about practicing and communicating the values you have as a family. If you make family time a priority face-to-face before technology happens, your kids will learn that balance. And if you start to make it as a young adult, prioritizing your relationships face-to-face, you'll be able to develop that as well. But it takes effort, right? You have to think about it.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And a lot of work. And because I was just thinking about another aspect of this, Joan Keefe, is that, you know, a lot of the schools, whether it's even kindergarten, send out homework via email because obviously they're not certain their kids are going to obviously communicate the proper work that needs to be accomplished to college. I mean, so much work gets submitted that screen time, do you count that as screen time or don't you? I guess there has to be a balance that's got to be found because of the obsessive OCD nature of your child.
Exactly. I mean, I think you make such a good point, and kids are onto this. When they want to access their social media page or they want to connect with friends in whatever way online, oh, I have to do homework. Mm-hmm. We hear this all the time on the support line. And you know what? There's a way of really balancing that and teaching responsibility when this comes up. And one of the things we recommend parents do, that if a child's not doing well in a certain subject, that they have to do the homework for that subject in a public place in the house, so at the kitchen table, at the dining room table, so the parents can check in on it so they aren't going onto social media. And there's ways of giving them access, but holding them accountable.
I just had an idea for myself because I'm years away. I'm sure it's going to happen in a blink of an eye, years away, because I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, from this being a problem in terms of homework and having them surfing the web and, you know, being afraid of that inappropriate sites. Maybe there's a way actually for me. This is the reason I'm sharing this idea, because it could possibly transfer to other parents, is that you can set up a satellite screen. And I'm coming up with all these ideas today, Joan. Satellite screen, so maybe you're in another room, and you can still see whatever they're seeing. So it's a mirrored screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of ways to monitor kids' work. The bottom line is if you're clear with your expectations about what the computer is for, how much time they have on it, and that they have that a lot of time to finish homework. If the homework doesn't get done, they get the consequence of getting a poor grade. There's ways of setting it up so they have the freedom to make the best choices, and they'll get the natural consequences if they don't follow through. it's really up to an individual parent how much they want to peek while it's happening.
It's interesting because lastly on this note on screen time is that Chipotle is, I'd say, pretty much a, I won't say young person's restaurant, but it's very common and flocked by young people. It's one of the healthier chains out there, and it's not that it's affordable, but it's kind of hip, the vibe, the convivial vibe in there.
And the one by me,
I'm telling you, it's a good 15-20 minute wait every time, because as soon as you open a door, you're in line. And it just, I took a picture of this the last two times in there and sent it to my wife. Every person in there, except for last Thursday, I think there were two people obviously older than me, then pretty much 99.9% of the persons waiting in line had their neck bent and they had their iPhone out. Crazy, right? The world we live in.
Yeah.
Joan Keefe, you're going to hang out with us so we can talk about entitlement after the break?
Sounds great.
Please do. This is PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. We'll be right back and we'll talk about entitlement. Are you raising a child that feels like they should have everything and anything underneath the sun? Let's find out. We'll find out also how to change that when we return on PRN.FM. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for hanging out with me on a beautiful Thursday. Coming to you live from New York City. It's PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. The show is Insights. Happy to welcome back to the show Joan Keefe. Joan Keefe is a parenting coach, and she also represents EmpoweringParents.com, a great website for anything you need to know about being a better parent. You don't want to be a worse parent, that's for sure. So we're talking about entitlement. Yeah, right? I want to be a worse parent. Can you tell me how to do that? We're talking about entitlement, and there's so many aspects to entitlement. We're going to kind of keep it in the preteen teen years because, obviously, we don't have that much time. We could take a day to even cover half this topic. But it's something that is growing rampant by the day and by the year, certainly. We see kids who get iPhones for Christmas, and these are $500-$700 iPhones. And when I speak nationally, Joan, I'm sorry if I didn't tell you this, to kids K through 12, college and corporations. And a lot of these kids are just so misinformed, I should say, about the cost of items. They have no idea. I ask, like, how many people own an iPhone? And 90% of the audience will raise their hands. How many of you think an iPhone costs $100? And most people raise their hands. No one has a clue that it costs that much. And I ask them, how many of you feel that you deserve and should require to have an iPhone with you 24/7? Of course, they raise their hands, etc. So it shows, it's proof in the fact that, you know, this is their norm. Is the norm set by their parents? Do the parents not have any rules and regulations and or backbone to say no to their children? So, and that's just an example. Extravagant birthday parties. Sometimes I ask them, okay, how many of you get ice cream cakes from Tom Carvel for your birthday? And I kid you not, Joan, and to our listeners, people are like, what is a Tom Carvel ice cream cake? And I'm like, holy, are you kidding me? That is what you live for. But, you know, with shows like The Cake Boss out there, you know, if your cake's not a $300-$500, you know, value, you know, a designer cake, it's crap. This is the generation we live in, Joan.
Yeah, it's tough right now, isn't it? Hey, I grew up in Rhode Island, so I know Carvel well.
Still love it. I had one the other day for my wife's birthday.
There you go. That's the spirit.
So what's the psychology, thank you, behind this, you know, this rampant condition?
Yeah. We hear it all the time on the support line from parents. You know, entitlement is nothing new. I think everybody goes through a period of time where when they're growing and maturing, they do want things. Kids start asking for things as soon as they can talk.
Sure.
It's really about how parents respond to the request that helps the child move from a sense of entitlement to a work ethic. I do think technology, the speed of technology, they're seeing, you know, tweens and teens are seeing kids their age posting on YouTube and getting famous. So they're rarely in a mindset. They believe that they have access to anything, even extravagance, without having to work for it. And I do think it's a combination of things. I think there's sort of been a sense of parents wanting kids to be happy over the last 10, 20 years.
Sure.
And lots of times parents giving in to kids or buying them things so that they can be considered a friend. And it's coming from a place of love and a place of wanting to be connected. Unfortunately, if that goes on, you create child as you get older. It can turn into...
We're losing you a bit there, Joan. Joan, you there?
Yep, still here.
Oh, good, good, good. I'm sure what you said was quite pivotal, but we didn't hear it. So,
okay.
But the thing that gets me really is that, we all want, I get it. We all want to give our children a better life than what we had growing up.
That's right.
Bit of a nicer house, maybe a larger house. Like my wife and I just bought a house that we dreamed about. We never thought we'd have it. And we still can't believe it. We're almost in it for a year that we have it. And my son says, but Dad, it's not my bathroom now is not nearly as nice as the one I had in our townhouse because I renovated it and it had granite countertops. He said to me, Dad, I want granite countertops. And, you know, he's regurgitating what I put in there because obviously I worked hard. I did it physically myself, which is a good thing. I'm teaching him that I worked hard to get the money to be able to afford it and to install and build this myself. But at the same time, you know, we want them to understand that now that they have a basement full of toys, that they're not getting more toys. And if they don't clean up, we are really boxing toys up. And I've given toys away because you have to put the hammer down with tact.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Be calm and clear. And it's really about repeating those opportunities for kids to learn that. Kids aren't going to learn a work ethic over a weekend or even over a year. They're going to learn it from your role modeling, just as you said. And it's really about setting limits about what they have access to. And if they do want more, that setting up a plan for them to earn it is really the key.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I guess understanding with your mate, when is enough enough?
Exactly. That can oftentimes cause some conflict in families when
friction.
People don't parent the same way. It happens all the time, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So finding some common ground. And unfortunately, kids can start to act out if they're used to getting things without earning them pretty early on. And by the time they're a tween or a teen, it can really become much worse. Sometimes, you know, unfortunately, going into verbal abuse or property destruction if they don't get what they want. And then by that time, I think both parents realize they have to set some limits.
I think the nucleus of the problem or the example, of course, I'm sure you would agree, are the parents. Because in this day and age, how many parents, I mean, we went through the decline in 2008 of over-mortgaging homes because I couldn't afford them. So they live check to check. They are maxed out on their credit cards because they feel entitled to having X, Y, and Z. They've been in a job for 15, 20 years. Why am I not getting a raise? Why am I not getting a next promotion? Because maybe their work ethic and or their product and their service that they're providing to this employer isn't good. But they feel that just because they've been there, they deserve that. Mm-hmm. So that's going to trickle down. And also the fact that they're spending fervor, that they just live on this frenzy and they live, you know, up to their eyeballs, leveraging credit card to credit card. And if they live like that, they're never going to say no to their kids. And that entitlement is only going to get bigger and bigger. And it's going to be a huge issue for this child when they try to live in the real world.
Yeah, it's you're so right. People are dealing with the struggle of entitlement at all ages. Whatever decade you're in, people struggle with this, especially in our culture. There's a lot of tempting things out there that make our lives shinier and brighter, and it's hard to resist that. And I think the bottom line is it's really about relationships. Because if you're reaching for more stuff all the time, whatever that might be, more money, a promotion, a better car, it's really because you want to feel valued. And value comes from doing the hard work of building relationships. And that includes parents going through the hard work of saying no to kids and then coaching and teaching them how to manage disappointment without taking it out on other people.
Coupled with self-esteem.
You got it. Their self-esteem goes up when they're challenged enough to accomplish something that's difficult, but that they're capable of practicing and getting a hold of, including not yelling or screaming or demanding or putting people down when they don't get what they want. You know, with practice, we can help kids learn how to manage disappointment. But we're right. We have to come from a place where we feel valued first so that we take the time to teach them that.
Socioeconomically, Joan, you just kind of touched on something that made me think of something. I think all classes feel entitled. The rich, I mean, they want to pay, get away with more tax breaks. This has been in the news for, you know, years and years. The poor, they feel entitled, and this is a generalization here, they feel entitled because they feel that their opportunities are less. And a lot of the times that's true. They should be on welfare, be able to have more limits, more opportunities of that nature. The middle class, why are they getting taxed the highest? Why don't they have more opportunities as the upper class or the, you know, the, was it the 8%? So, I mean, it is a struggle all across the board.
Yeah, it really is. We hear this, we hear from all kinds of folks who call into our support line, doctors and lawyers and therapists and, you know, folks who have their own business, stay-at-home parents. Everyone struggles with the need to be valued and how to teach your child where real value comes from. Mm-hmm. And it really is about working it out together.
Strike
it's
a balance.
About doing the tough work. Yeah, strike a balance. You know, technology and all the opportunities in this world aren't going to slow down. It's really about making your mind up about what the values in your family are and being consistent about that.
I tell my son, my five-year-old, there are three things that your mom and I have to do in this world for you. Love you, keep you safe, and educate you. That's it. I mean, obviously those are three simple things to say it like that, but...
Well said, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, those are your things. Yeah, we'd like to be friends and parents, you know, but we're not. You know, we need to tell them when they're being a pain in the ass or doing something wrong and to stop it and to correct your way, because you don't want that child to become something that's not healthy for them, that's not going to be accepted in the real world, in the professional world, in the school environment, et cetera. So, I mean, entitlement, I think, just comes from so many areas. And we all know people who feel, and sometimes people, you know, obviously we all suffer loss, but maybe tragedy. And they feel like, oh, well, that person's that way because you know what happened, you know. And I think over time and with help and therapy, almost everything can be overcome and or livable. You never forget an experience, but that doesn't give you the right to expect certain treatment in this world. One of the things I speak about is that, you know, I say to kids in school, raise your hand if you have a driver's license, depends on a grade or level or college. And raise your hands if you think everybody in this room should have a driver's license. Of course, all the hands go up. And I said, well, when I was your age, I thought the same thing. And I couldn't understand why the state of New Jersey and all other states said that driving is a privilege, not an entitlement. And it kind of goes over their head a little bit. And I said, well, because you actually can kill somebody in an instant. You're driving a, you know, 2-3-4 ton vehicle, and you're at the mercy, or other people are at the mercy of your skill and ability. And this is before texting, you know, really got into play when I first started talking about this. But it's so true that driving isn't a privilege, is a privilege, not an entitlement. As an example,
so
for them to kind of understand it.
Yeah, it's really important. You make such a good distinction that feels like you're peeking right into our methods here at the support line, because we talk about privileges all the time. And technology, smartphones, iPads, computers, screen time in general is a privilege. Someone has to pay for it, and it isn't necessarily a necessity. Even when it's about homework, someone's paying for that internet access. And it's really teaching kids to be conscious and aware of that helps them understand the value of things, helps them balance things a little bit better.
Joan, do me a favor. Tell me about the network you're speaking about.
Well, we parent company name is Legacy Post. We publish parenting and other family programs to support families to develop better relationships. And one of our most popular programs is Total Transformation. It's a parenting program to help kids achieve better behavior. And we are featured on a website called empoweringparents.com. You can go on there, look up anything from not doing homework to kids dealing with drugs and alcohol, and you'll get expert articles on how to break down the steps to how to deal with all those tough challenges.
Yeah, very palatable. I mean, very engrossing and very topical.
Yes, exactly right. And parents nowadays need all the support they can get, because it's my opinion that we're growing up and helping our kids grow up in the most challenging world we've seen so far.
Have you ever gotten a question fielded to you, Joan, that by a parent or parents saying, I don't think I'm giving my child too many liberties, but how would I find out if I am?
Yeah, lots of times, you know, we parent from the way we were parented. Or a parent is caught up in a community where they're very connected and a lot of the kids have a lot of technology and privileges, and they don't realize that they're not presenting it as a privilege, they're presenting it as a necessity. So we talk to parents about how much usage or access kids have for technology or other privileges, and then we start to make a plan about focusing on one behavior at a time and making a plan for better behavior and change. And if a child is overwhelmed by having too much access, those first moments of saying no can be tough, but they're so necessary. And after that, it gets easier. It's really about being consistent, calm and consistent with limits, and talking to kids about things changing so that the relationships can get stronger in the family.
As hard as it is for the kid, it's actually, I think, harder for a parent, because, I mean, the first time you do something like this to set the precedent, the willpower it takes not to cave in is gargantuan.
Yes. It really is. We love our kids. We want the best
to a
for
fault.
Them. And yeah, exactly. And when parents first start talking to us, you know, they talk about all of the anger they're getting and the frustration and maybe even verbal abuse or worse. And we say to them, pushback is a really difficult stage to go through. But if you stay calm and respectful and you stand your ground and you're consistent with your limits and you're also consistent with rewards and praise, and then things start to change. But it takes patience and practice to change relationships.
And yeah, I think when all that's in place, Joan, it's very clear, like people, we were talking about this before, Kim Kardashian, the Kardashians of the world, all the far from reality programs that are scripted, you know, these are what these kids are looking at. The magazines that, you know, the perfect models, male and female, how to get a better body in 5 days, how to speak five languages in 5 minutes, you know, all this crap, you know, you're just ensconced with it. So, you know, it's, and then you come home to your mother and father who say to you, put that goddamn thing down. You know, but they're like, well, this is who I want to be. This is who I want to strive to be. You want me to be a better person, right? You want me to grow up to be smart and successful. This is what I need. This is part of my, you know, DNA. But once you put that, you know, these steps in place, you know, you start nibbing at it slowly but surely. Obviously, the key is to start early enough, so it's not a dramatic change.
It makes it easier. Yeah.
So you don't thrown underneath the hate bus.
Exactly. It makes it easier when you can start early. But one of the co-creators of Total Transformation, Janet Lehman, always says it's never too late to change. We have parents calling in who are just making changes and their child is 17. And they start to actually make those changes happen. It's not easy, but, you know, parents are the safest place in most instances for kids to learn discipline, to learn value, and to learn balance. And they may never mention it. You and I both know teenagers are not going to give you praise. That's very uncommon.
You have to wait a decade for that.
You have to wait a few years for that.
Exactly, until they have their own kids.
But they appreciate guidance. They appreciate good role modeling. And it has a lot of value.
And finally, Joan Keefe, a parenting expert from EmpoweringParents.com. What do you say to parents and or future parents who say, oh, but so-and-so's parents let them do that, or such-and-such can always do that. They go away to Paris every summer, or whatever the case may be. What do you say about comparisons?
We hear this all the time. It's such a good point, Mark. You know, what we really say to them is, do you know what? It's really great that your friend has the opportunity to go and travel. I think that's great. I know it's tough to not be able to do the same thing. But, you know, we're talking about our family, and these are the rules in our house, and that's what I need you to pay attention to.
Well, Mom, can't you take out another loan? can't you remortgage the house again?
Right. You can say, no, we're not going to make that choice. We are going to make some changes around here. I know it's not easy. But why don't we start here? why don't we start with this new plan? And I know you can do this. And I think it's going to get easier to live with everyone in this house.
There's so many things that you can predict, not so much accurately, like financial market, maybe global warming. I certainly think they're onto something there, for sure. Is there mm-hmm. are there trends, especially with technology, mm-hmm. the changing nucleus of the nuclear family, I should say, are there things mm-hmm. that you can see or feel coming down the pike?
Yeah, I think bullying is the first thing that came to my mind. Something that has always been around, as you and I know.
Always will be around.
You got it. It's part of growing up. However, cyberbullying has turned into something where children have died. And it's, you know, very fortunate that we live in a country where a lot of people work together when they're passionate about something. And there's a lot of folks who are really working together to encourage kids to speak out and to make a plan to get safe again. But I have seen probably, I've been on the line for over 3 years now from when I first started. Bullying was constantly mentioned, and although it's definitely still out there, we still need to pay attention to it. I see parents and kids being more proactive, asking for help, finding ways to navigate online time safely, and, you know, other parents setting limits with kids who might be mm-hmm. doing the bullying. So I think we're headed in the right direction there.
There's dialogue, which is key. I speak about, you know, bullying and anti-bullying and overcoming adversity, celebrating differences, and teasing, et cetera. And, you know, I say it to certain people, it will always exist. But if we can curtail the cyberbullying, et cetera, and I tell the audiences, kids, the biggest message is you have the real power. You have the real power, not the bullies. Because once you speak up and either tell a principal, a guidance counselor, a stepbrother, sister, clergy, whatever, you are going to make change happen.
You got it.
Joan Keefe, all the best to you. Thank you for doing the incredible job that you do. EmpoweringParents.com. EmpoweringParents.com. Is there any other way people can get in touch with you, Joan?
EmpoweringParents.com. And you can also access and write into us with parenting questions at service@legacypublishingcompany.com. It's a great way to reach us.
Service@legacypublishing.com.
LegacyPublishingCompany.com.
Company, all right. Joan, all the best to you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Cheers. That's been Joan Keefe with some great insight on entitlement and screen time. I have to say in closing, I'm not myself today. Lost a friend of mine the other day. And it's one of those things where you just feel really pissed off. I feel like I'm pissed off more than I am sad right now because at 52 years of age, Bill Ambrose is robbed of many, many years to come. Great experiences, birthday parties, weddings, one-on-one moments with a good friend, having a cold beer with Bill Ambrose, watching the New York Giants hopefully win. Bill, you will be missed. Good man, and built many good things in life as a carpenter. My name is Mark Farrell. Check me out next Thursday on PRN.FM. We'll have some more compelling topics. Until then, have a great weekend. Cheers. We'll